Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, how are we doing this week?
We're doing good, Jimmy. How are you?
Good. Having a good week. Did an event this week with some of the football players. We got to talk to them. All of them, Andy, were fantastic to talk to. Dom Rooley, Brock Riker, Quentin Martin, Kobe Howard. And then got a chance to interview Mr. Hoosier. The general manager, Derek Hoosier, got a chance to speak with him.
How did that go?
Tell you what, he's a really impressive guy. He was not afraid of any of the questions, met him head on, very well spoken. It was the kind of interview where afterwards you say, you know what, I have confidence in this guy. Based on how he answered the questions. The ultimate test comes in the fall, okay? For Campbell, for Hoosier, for all of them.
Yep.
Ultimately, they have to win games. But I think what I was most impressed by, Andy, is there seems to be a real plan, okay? Now, the plan may or may not work, but there's a plan.
There definitely is a plan. They're going to need better players to compete.
And we talked.
That's it. It's very simple. That's it.
Well, but they have confidence. We talked a bit, you know, I think the big question that most people, this was not our agenda to talk about this, but it is very fascinating. I did ask him about, you know, the criticism that they're getting for a lot of three-star recruits, and he said, look, we don't pay attention to the star ratings. We do our own ranking of players. And he gave some examples that were legit, where we had players that were three stars, no stars. Now look where they are. And he said, and even the fact is, until they play their senior season, are you really getting a legit ranking for these players? They feel good about how they rank players and that they are getting the type of players that they feel confident in. But there was one other statement that he made, Andy, that I found interesting and also leads me to say that they have a plan. He talked about Danton Lynn's defense and what he wants to do. And he made reference to, we realized pretty early on, we didn't necessarily have the kind of players that he wanted. And we had to adjust to that. I think the most obvious example, of course, is the size on the defensive line and the tackles that they brought in. But it wasn't random. It was part of a plan.
Yeah.
Like I said, we'll see if the plan works. But I like that there at least is one.
Yeah, they're just getting started. They're handcuffed. You know, they were a mile behind everybody else. Yeah, it was a couple weeks, you know, 10 days, a week and a half late on the hire. But it wasn't that. It was that they started so far behind because of the time. They're battling uphill. I still think they're battling uphill for at least two seasons, Jimmy. The star rating stuff, that's a little bit of smoke and mirrors in my estimation. It's like, come on, good players are good players. You know what I mean? We're looking for our guys and three. What, dude? You know, Micah Parsons is a good football player. You want that guy in your football team, right?
Well,
I'm not buying it.
Well, here's what I think is the difference. Micah Parsons is not a good player. He's a great player. Okay. And I think ultimately what you're saying is true. You win with great players. Yeah. But I think underneath that good in the star rating, the five stars, man, everybody knows who they are. I think you and some other folks have told me this. When you're watching a high school football game, it takes you like one time seeing Nick Singleton play to go, yep,
that's
player.
It.
Shady McCoy.
Got to jump out at you. If you're an FBS prospect, you better jump out on a high school field.
But I think the next level players that are still considered really good players and even four-star players all the way, you know, there's a big span of players. Maybe the top 20, 30, 40 players, they're the elite and everyone knows who they are. Call it 40 players. But from player 41, maybe to player 400, that becomes the judgment call of the people evaluating. And I think that's part of the equation also. But
yeah,
again, go ahead.
The last thing I want to say is, I think if you look at your roster, I think they're what they do, player 12 through 30, right? I think they're going to be outstanding at that. I think they're going to have to find a way to get more quality top 10 players on your roster on this team and on this field. That's their biggest challenge. I think they're going to crush it at the second level, but it's the top level. You need three or four of them.
You know what, Andy? On that note, I agree with you 1,000%. I think that's where it is. And you are going to like the question that you're going to get from Dave from Wilmington.
Okay. I'm ready.
Well, he's thinking the exactly how we are on that issue. All right, Andy. How about if we go back and hit our actual agenda for today as we're halfway through quarter number one, and that is the absolute mess that is the Brendan Sorsby story. But he gambled on his own team, gambled on college football, should have been suspended like every other sport in the history of sports. And they shopped court systems. They got a local state, a Texas state judge to rule in their favor. And then Texas Tech just kept burying themselves, defending the choice to play him. And finally, though, we find out the decision was made. He's going to enter the supplemental draft of the NFL, and he's not going to play at Texas Tech this year. Your overall thoughts? Laughing is not a thought, Andy.
Yeah, is there another shoe to drop? I mean, so Texas Tech paid him how much, nobody really knows, but he got money from him, right? Like, it's clear he got money.
Yes. I've been reading recently, and it kind of makes sense with the numbers, that he's probably been being paid from the moment he's, you know, joined them. The best guess appears to be approximately $1 million.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So, you know, gambling addiction and gambled on himself and, you know, paid off at Texas Tech. $1 million for literally doing nothing. The university, there'll be a playbook for how to do it, how not to do it, or how to not do anything. Remotely correct. The supplemental draft, I mean, that means it's risky. He has to give up the eligibility, right? Like, he has to go in and drop the court case against the NCAA to say, I surrender, right? Like,
yes,
there's no possible way to go here again. And then at the same time, you've got to find an NFL team. In case you don't know, I think it's important to understand the supplemental draft. It's a open bid lottery, right? Like, you bid for the player as an NFL team, and the highest bid wins. And that's the draft pick you lose in that draft if you win. So It is your own take, and how much are you willing to gamble? I mean, looking at him quarterback wise, is he like, would he have been one of those top five must have picks? I don't think so. I mean, he's a pretty darn good quarterback, but he's not, you know, he's not all that in a box of chocolates. He has potential to be a quality NFL quarterback at play, but I don't know. And then I fail to understand the process that he's going through, because it screams to the public, the only thing that matters to me is football. Football is everything and the only thing. Not healthy, especially for somebody with an addiction problem. Not healthy in any way, shape, or form. On any level, and pretty much all his decisions along the line are, this is it for me. This is who I am. Dangerous. Just as when James Franklin did his public interview after Penn State fired him, you know, I need to get back. This is all I know. This is who I am. I don't go unhealthy, dangerous. And this screams unhealthy, dangerous for the young man. And you know, you're not that good. You're good, but you're not great. You're a very good quarterback, not great.
Well, the couple things. I think you're right. Good, not great is a good description. That's why I believe he was hoping going to Texas Tech, a loaded roster, they would play well. And we've seen this so many times. The most recent obvious one, Fernando Mendoza. A year ago, you would have said, hey, maybe a good quarterback, not a great quarterback. A year later, he's a national champion. He's a Heisman Trophy winner, and he's the number one pick in the draft. I'm not saying that's what would have happened with Sorsby, but
The tools are there.
He was looking forward to, you know, playing a year with Texas Tech with a loaded roster and at least enhancing his draft status, okay? Just how much he could have improved his draft status, we'll never know. Okay. And a couple things, Andy, and we're up against the break, so we'll pick this up when we get back. But I want to explain in a little more detail how this supplemental draft works, because it is a little bit confusing. We're going to do that, Andy, right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number two of our show. Andy, we were talking about Sorsby, Brendan Sorsby, as we finished up segment number one. And we talked a little bit about he's entering the supplemental draft. Just to explain exactly how that works, you explain, you know, it's like you bid on him. What you're bidding is a draft pick.
Correct.
So you use this year's draft order. I guess the Raiders, you know, had the first pick in the draft. They would have the first opportunity, round one, pick one, would they want them? Who's number two, three? And the way they do it is each team submits, hey, I would do a fourth round pick. You know, we're fourth round, pick 23. That's where we would go. And is there any team that would bid a higher pick than that? They would get them prior to us. That's how that works. But also, his decision, it's fascinating to me that this decision was made. It caught people off guard, and I'm thinking it should not have caught anybody off guard, because the reaction. I don't think Texas Tech nor Soresby expected the blowback that they got. Conferences, the media, and maybe most importantly, the court of public opinion was so strong against this. I don't think Texas Tech realized what they were stepping into. And some people there finally said, you know, this just isn't worth it, Andy.
So I think the blowback was hardest against Texas Tech, right? I feel it was a little more balanced about the kid, right? Like, it wasn't all about per se the kid. I think the hardest blowback, and earned, not given, by the way, Texas Tech just made themselves look to be like, you know, stupid is stupid does, right? Like, you go around every corner and it was like, oh, here, you're swallowing more stupid pills. Let me open the jar for you. You know, they look selfish, self-centered. And here's the worst part of it. They can't read the room. They have no idea. They're looking around at each other in the room and going, what happened today? I woke up in such a good mood. What's wrong with this? You know what I mean? Like, they can't see the forest through the trees that, hello, you are at the center of the problem. I think they, because Texas Tech, and he's never played it down for them. He just took some of their money and got paid a lot of money to potentially be their quarterback. I think he got swept up in some of that. And obviously, that's tough, right? Like, he got swept up in the university's inability to read the room. And when he gets swept up in this, the way it's shaking out now, as we're seeing it, Jimmy, he looks desperate, right? You're like, supplemental draft? Now you filed a court case, you won an injunction, and now you're going to just done, right? NFL, it's like hopscotch, right? Like, you know, think old school. I know some of you might have to look it up, but think hopscotch, bouncing all over the place. This decision feels forced a little bit. I think Texas Tech, in its stupidity, has sort of put the kid in a bad spot and sort of forced him to make a desperate decision. But at the end of the day, he's making the choices. To me, this just looks desperate.
Well, Andy, I'll look at it maybe just a little bit differently. I think the kid was doing, first of all, the gambling, everything he did, the gambling, he was stupid on his part, wrong, all of those things. Now, next step, what he needs to do, I think the ability to play another year in college at Texas Tech was, in his outlook, the best case scenario, in his best interest. From the school's perspective, they made the mistake of thinking the same thing. Soresby coming in as a really good quarterback, that's in our best interest. Oh, the whole gambling scandal came up, that's still in our best interest to have him play. When really, right, it never dawned on them that, no, you're going to get slaughtered by public opinion, your own conference, the rest of college football. And the problem in this is, Andy, you've probably been in these meetings. I know I've been in these meetings for the last 40 years. The company is in trouble. They have an issue. They all get into a room and say, hey, how about if we say this? Oh, yeah, everyone will buy that. I think someone said, let's say the kid is sick. He didn't do anything wrong. He's just suffering from an illness, this gambling addiction. We'll turn him into a sympathetic figure. And everyone went, yeah, that'll work. Everyone will buy into that. Well, no one bought into it. And rightfully so. And then I think it dawned on Texas Tech finally that, you know what? That sympathy angle ain't going to work. people aren't going to fall for it, or they didn't fall for it. So now what we do, what do we do? And finally, ultimately, I think the pressure was so great that cooler heads prevailed at Texas Tech and said, we just can't have this, which left. And they had the pressure also because the Big 12 was threatening, you know, legal action and all. If the deadline to apply for the supplemental draft was coming, and it was a very real threat that it would come and go, and the kid would have no options if some of the other legal action worked. Finally, it just became the easier route to take, or the only route to take. Gee, he's not going to be able to play here. Okay, you're Sorsby. What do? You apply for the supplemental draft. It's all you have left.
It was problematic already once his gambling addiction came out. So then you start from there, in my opinion, when I'm looking at this, as you're talking about it. Texas Tech then becomes responsible for managing it. Who created the problem that spawned off of this? Was it the kid? Did he come out and say stupid things? You know, et cetera. No. Texas Tech, self-inflicted wound. Read the room, swallowing stupid pills. Then when the going gets tough, they literally run him up the flagpole, wave him in the wind, and wash their hands and say, we're out of here. We can't do this. They created the problem, and they ran from their own problem. Yeah, that's a school you want to look at if you're going to send your kids there. Not as a student, but as an athlete. Because that athletic department is a train wreck on many, many fronts, in my opinion. So many. Look, the kid has a problem. He should be held accountable. The adults in the room let him down. They hung themselves out to dry, and they took him and ran him up the flagpole with him.
Yeah, and I hesitate to in any way make him, the kid, a sympathetic figure.
No, absolutely not. No. He's got a problem. He's not a sympathetic figure. He's a troubled young man with a problem. You got to fix your problem before you can move on. None of this screams to me that he's has a keen interest in fixing a problem before moving on. He just wants to move on.
And Texas Tech enabled him. Andy, yeah, a couple things. They enabled the kid by saying, yep, he should be able to play, sympathetic figure. He did nothing wrong except he has this illness called gambling addiction. They should have been smarter right from the start. They weren't. They finally realized the error of their ways, or even if they think they're right, they realized the blowback was so great that they couldn't deal with it. Another point I wanted to make, and again, doesn't make anyone here a sympathetic figure, but when you talk about the $1 million that he already received from the school, that money's been spent on legal fees already.
Yeah, right. I mean, the attorneys he's hiring aren't cheap. That's correct.
So that's all part of it. And I think it's also interesting, Andy, and I think this is also a pattern of behavior with the kid. And we don't know all the details of it, but if you remember initially when he transferred from Cincinnati, and I was just a huge advocate of what was going on, which was he had a better opportunity to make much more money, but he had a contract with a buyout clause, allegedly. Right. So for him to go take the $5 million or so from Texas Tech, it was going to cost him $1 million to leave Cincinnati. This is like the standard kind of contract we see with college coaches. You have a buyout to get out.
Correct.
I think it's the perfect arrangement, Andy.
I like
Except
it.
Except I do too. I thought this is the example of how things should go. You know what? They refused to pay the $1 million. And this was before the gambling issue came
up. Correct.
So there's a lawsuit going on Cincinnati is suing him for that $1 million because they his team, meaning he and his lawyers, refused to pay that back. My point being, might there just be, you know, a trail of this kind of behavior going on, which, by the way, as an NFL team, would make me a bit leery of him.
Yeah, I don't think he makes it inside 150. I don't think anybody bids higher than pick 150 for him. That's how the final decision made. What pick number? Because, you know, each one decided to pick. Pick 150. That's my number. If anybody goes above 150, man, you're risking, you're spending a lot of capital for that.
Andy, it was my understanding there'd be no math in our show today, but pick 150, that's like five rounds, right?
I'm thinking a fifth round pick. Yeah, anything higher than a fifth round pick, it's just like, it's not worth it. There's so much that comes with it. It's just not the football player now. You got a U-Haul of baggage behind you now, Jimmy.
I agree 1,000% with you on that, Andy. All right. We've done enough of the Brendan Sorsby story. Let's hit Andy's favorite segment. And we all know what that is. That's when you take over my job. You ask the questions, which makes Andy happy. We're going to do that right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. That means it's time for your questions. You get to ask Andy. If there's the Ask Andy button on the app. If you're online and listen to one of our shows, we have in there a place where you can make your comments. And if all else fails, email me at info@ksnsports.net. And you, too, could have your question to Andy answered. All right. I mentioned this earlier, Andy, in our conversation, that you would like the question from Dave from Wilmington, who says, as much as I like Matt Campbell, I'm concerned about the fact that this team has no outstanding players. Star players ultimately win games. Do you share my concern?
It's not a concern. I can't have a concern about it right now. Yes, they don't have a top 100 player in college football on their roster. They don't. They just simply don't. As you look at it right now, Matt knows that. He knows that they have to be, the sum of their parts have to be greater than any one piece. They've got to do a little bit of mixing and matching, make a little bit of chicken salad. He knows that. They know that. That's the position that a bit of it that he inherited. I think they did well in the transfer portal. I think they did a slightly above average considering what they were starting with. I think Penn State fans, you've got to be more patient. There is no product for him to sell. I can't emphasize this to you enough. Elite players, they're looking for a product and a brand. Yes, Penn State is a blue blood. Yes, Penn State is one of those tradition schools. And that matters, but what's the product look like now? I think sometimes fan bases lose focus on that. Right now, Matt doesn't have a product to sell. He's got a product he's going to put out there. They've got a favorable schedule. That's another thing you can't forget. There is a huge, huge card that they hold in the deck. Their schedule is not difficult. So let him get a product and then let him start from there. He is recruiting and selling right now something that is not tangible. It will be tangible in 6 months. It is not tangible right now. So I think I don't have it. That's why Dave in Wilmington has a very, you're right, they do need better players. I said it earlier in the show. It ain't going to happen overnight, I don't think. And he lands a top five recruiting class. That's not the way he operates. He is a builder, and he is not going to try and build it like a Lego Erector set. He's going to build it with a strong base. You have to trust his process because I think it has relevancy. Add the blue bloodness of Penn State to it, but it's going to take some time. It's just a time thing. And I'm not talking 5 years. I'm talking give him this season, look at the recruiting a little bit differently, but after 2 years, that's a tangible product to sell. Where are they after the 27 season, and what, how are they reshaping this roster going forward? To me, that's when you really start looking at it at another level.
You make excellent points there, Andy, and the way Dave frame the question, I am concerned that they don't have outstanding players. But I think with that said, as you pointed out, with the schedule, Andy, they're going to have the better roster 9 out of 12 times.
Eight, maybe nine. Yes. We don't need to go down the schedule, but eight. Yeah. Washington's a toss up.
Well, Washington, USC, Michigan. Who's the other team that you're thinking of?
Now there's one more. It's a toss-up. Yeah, Washington. They don't play Indiana.
They don't play Indiana, Oregon, Ohio State.
Nebraska? See, that's a maybe. I'm not saying it's a number.
I'm trying. Who's Nebraska's quarterback?
Yeah, you know, good question.
So I think they have the better roster. You know, might they get ambushed somewhere on the road? Could that happen? Yes, but I think it would be an upset if someone other than those three teams beat them. All right, let's move on. Matt from Massachusetts says, Jim and Andy, could college football benefit from a champion conference during the regular season? Take the top 25 teams every year and make a schedule around that.
I don't know. Because I think it's so, in order to do that, you have to have, you know, there has to be a buildup in precedence. I don't think there's any buildup anymore. I think it's literally the turnover is so fast and great now, right? It just happened so fast that it's, you know, there's a lot of potential. There's way more potential for lightning in a bottle than a team doing a 3-year build. You know what I mean? So landing 25 teams, tough.
I think also the premise of, you know, who are the top 25 teams this year and, you know, is that how you do it? Tulane sneaks into the top 25 and they become one of the teams here. I think for a, he called a champion conference, I think the super conference concern is the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference saying we're going to go off and do our own thing.
Yeah.
You know, when there's some other thought that, you know, okay, and then we'll go grab Florida State and Clemson and, you know, the elite teams from the ACC and Big 12, and maybe there's 50 teams or something to that effect. And, Andy, I think the one thing that's always forgotten in those conversations, the problem with having an elite conference that, and they just play each other.
They beat each other up.
Right. Someone has to be at the bottom of that group.
Right. Someone's got to be at the bottom.
Matt's, you know, plan of the top 25 teams, whoever's number 25, if all everything went to chalk, someone would be 0-12. A top 25 team would be 0-12 or 1-11 or 2-10. no way those teams would tolerate it. I think those teams, it's why those out-of-conference gimmies, you know, if I have three or four games that are automatic wins, it's also coaching security. You know, I end up being 7-5 when really I'm 3-5 against any games that matter, and I'm 4-0 against the cupcakes. With the cupcakes are needed in this world, Andy.
Yeah, Matt, and also we're pretty darn close because I think 6 or 7 out of your 10 best teams in the country are coming from two conferences among 35 schools, right? Yep. SEC, Big Ten. 6 or 7 of your best 10 are coming from there generally. That's where we're at.
All right, let's move on. Let's get to Henry in Morristown, New Jersey. Let's get back to talking about football players.
Hey.
Henry says, will Rocco Beck be an NFL draft pick next year?
Good question. Yeah. Could he be a 6th or 7th round pick? Maybe someone grabs him in the 5th round. Yeah. He's got some superpower. He's got moxie. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He, you know, he knows how to pick his keister up off the deck after, you know, he's been, you know, knocked sideways a little bit, relatively speaking. And, you know, come back. There's a lot of elements to him that, you know, NFL teams will like as a kid. Yeah, give that kid a shot, right? I see he's got elements that would appeal to NFL teams on a secondary level. Not an elite quarterback, not a star, not a future foundational, you know, franchise quarterback type thing. But there's a lot of elements that he brings to the table that NFL teams will want to take their Dorito and dip it in. You know what I mean? Hey, I got a food reference in. You know, what? Chips and salsa. Chips and queso. Yum.
You know, I think he profiles as a competent backup quarterback in the NFL. But and you know the NFL game much better than I do, Andy. Brock Purdy, his predecessor, who was the last pick in the draft, ended up with the 49ers. I'm saying Giants. I'm thinking baseball. But ended up with the 49ers, their starter. How good an NFL quarterback is Brock Purdy?
Brock Purdy's a very good NFL quarterback. He's not elite. He's a very good NFL quarterback. A chunk of that goes to Kyle Shanahan. A chunk of it goes to Brock. Brock got better, right? Like, there was something about Brock that, you know, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch really liked, and they were willing to take a gamble on it. There were those elements, right? Kyle Shanahan unlocked it, and Brock Purdy was able to reach his expectations, which that's a two-way street that doesn't happen very often. And he has gotten better. Injuries have played a role for him, right? Like, more recently, he's been a little bit injury prone, but he's a great NFL quarterback. He's not elite. He's not in any list of greatest conversation, et cetera, et cetera. He's a great quarterback. He really is. He is something to be aware of. If all the pieces fall right for him, he's that guy that could win it all. He's got those elements in him.
How important is it, and you alluded to this a bit, that he's in the 49ers system?
So, yeah, the right fit, you always hear that too. That matters. But all the right fit is, everyone thinks it's a one-way street. It's a two-way street, right? It's got to unlock something in him that he didn't even know he could do. And that's what it looks like at the next level. And arm talent, pure, you know, football, IQ, all of it was good, nothing great. The combination of the two, you know, Shanahan's vision and understanding and Purdy's belief and ability to, and belief that he could get better and did get better, that's the magic dust. It's very, very hard to find. Very hard to find. But he had all the elements. And much like Rocco Beck has a lot of elements that NFL teams are going to, it's going to appeal to them on many levels.
Yeah. My only point was, and was a good explanation, Andy, is in the NFL, same thing in college football, you know, who are you surrounded with? What's the coaching like is so important. All right, that's it for quarter number three. One more segment to go. Stick with us.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy, I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show. Andy, let's really shift gears here and talk about something that's a little bit more fun. This is an off-season topic, but it struck me, I read the other day, Florida Gators, they play in the Swamp. Have you ever been to that stadium?
I have.
Okay.
Several times.
I'm going to ask you in a bit what it's like, but similar to Penn State, they're doing a renovation of the stadium. Now, me personally, I was wondering about the cost of the Penn State renovation, $800 million. And by the way, I've been asked by people, Jim, why do you keep saying $800 million? Isn't it $700? You know, they did some preliminary work, this, that, put it in a different bucket. It's $800 million about. And God knows if there'll be overruns. But with that said, Penn State looks like a bunch of pikers, Andy, compared to Florida. Do you know they're spending $1.5 billion on their renovation? You've been to the stadium. Do they need a $1.5 billion renovation to the stadium?
So they don't have a real, for the alumni and the money base, they don't. The Swamp is a great stadium. It's like there's some elements of Penn State. Penn State's an erector set. This is like the old school. It's kind of a bowl, right? Mm-mm. Think of, you know, your sombrero stadiums. Think of it like that, right? A little bit like that. They've done some, you know, they've done some nip and tuck, I guess, if you're going to use the cosmetic surgery type thing. But I think that the cost here is coming. They're going full luxury, not for the dudes in the seats, but infrastructure inside their the suites and all of that stuff, right? Their luxury boxes, they have it, but it's a little bit of a nip and tuck type thing. They're going all in on making this a modern stadium. I mean, in some ways, the lower bowl has some Penn State up, like you sit on bleacher seats, right? The upper deck is really high and steep. And you kind of sit and you kind of have to lurch to see. It's not perfect. It's a great atmosphere, but it is old school, right? It is very simple. And I think the reason it's going to cost twice as much as Penn State is they're going inside the money bags and going to spend the money to get the money. Penn State already has its, you know, it's sort of suite level all up and running. The Swamp had some of it and they were trying to peddle it off. It doesn't cut the mustard anymore in the modern era. It just, they were trying to sell something that doesn't exist, so they have to build it.
And this is comment will be, you know, set up another conversation another day. But when you're reaching $1.5 billion, I start wondering, at what point would it have just been better off
build a new
stadium?
Yeah.
You know, we talked in Buffalo, the Bills, their new stadium is $2 billion, but that also includes not a dome roof over the field, but over the fans with heating in it, you know, to melt off the snow. I mean, there's things that make it an NFL stadium and an NFL stadium in the north. And that's $2 billion. When you're up to $1.5 billion, What's another $500 million, Andy? All right, let me get to the fun part of this conversation. As I alluded to, is it got me to thinking, Andy, and you've had much more experience than I have as far as attending games in different stadiums, is what makes a stadium a good stadium, and what makes a stadium a favorite to you? And, you know, there, first of all, what's your criteria? What if I were to ask you the best stadiums, what's the criteria you would use?
So I like history. I like a historical element to be in place, right? Like, I like to be able to understand what it was and where it came from, and can you still see elements of that? I like that. I like clear open spaces on the guts, right? Like simple, clear walking paths. A lot of the modern baseball stadiums, they're just fantastic, Jimmy, right? There's a ton of room in the walkways. There's a ton of room in the concession areas. It just, there can be a lot of people and it can be congested, but you don't ever feel like you're stuck in a traffic jam, right? Don't make me walk down and around and under and over it. Let's just face it. Beaver Stadium is an erector set, and getting around that place is like a labyrinth. That's just the way it is. That's not a good experience for me. The atmosphere matter, yeah, in the moment, but not in the big picture. I'm just going to say it. What do your concessions look like? What are your options? If I'm going to spend $12 on a hot dog, I just don't want a plain old hot dog from
a good bag of donuts.
Yeah, give me some bling, because you're going to charge me $12 for the hot dog anyway. Give me something else. Give me a line or clear operations or an understanding of my choices, right? Like, I think good options, you know, for your $27, you know, Surfside, good options and choices matter. So I think that is part of it. Natural grass is a big deal for me. There's something elementary and simplistic about natural grass that always just draws me in. So those are just a few of the elements. I don't care low or high. Geography in a stadium is irrelevant to me, believe it or not, Jimmy. I don't care if I have the second row or the second row from the top. Does not matter. Geography is completely irrelevant to me. A stadium experience should be the same, higher or lower. Suites are different. That's not what I'm talking about. If geography matters to you, then any cookie cutter stadium is due, because you just want to be in the spot you want to be in. I think a great stadium is irrelevant of geography inside it.
Just a quick note on that. It's interesting you say that about where you are. One of the things, everyone wants to be on the 50-yard line, right, Andy?
Yeah, don't care.
I love the end zone seats and what you're able to see. You could see a play develop. You could see the whole opening for the running back. There's some things there. You use the word geography, meaning within the stadium. I think there's some geography outside the stadium. I talked to some folks this week, real anxious to go out to Washington and see that game, because they're going
right
to
on the lake.
Sailgate.
Yeah, right on the lake. Beautiful. Great stadium. Been there.
There's something, you know, Northwestern with their temporary stadium on the lake there now, you know, had a lot of praise there. How important, I love that, by the way, Andy, that you mentioned history of a stadium. When you mentioned it, I real quickly wrote down Wrigley Field, the Palestra in Philadelphia. The Palestra is just a high school gym, you know, in a way.
Right.
But the history is so great there. Madison Square Garden, the Boston Garden. There's history there.
Chicago Stadium, yes, for football. Chicago Stadium's cool for the Bears play. Cool one.
You know, it'll soon be the Indiana Bears, though. Anyway, that's off topic for another day. How important is the atmosphere that the fans create at a stadium?
Yeah, in the moment, you enjoy that. But big picture, when I'm measuring a stadium, when I look at it from my perspective, in the moment, that matters. Like, wow, look at this crowd, right? Like, I've been to a ton of NFL stadiums, seen a lot of cool things. Seattle's cool. I'm sorry, you guys do a great job. Kansas City's better. Sorry. They just are. But that's in the moment. That, and in terms of overall picture, it's not as relevant to me as others might think.
In the few minutes we have left, let's get to the important questions, Andy. Give me your favorites and why.
The Rose Bowl is at the top of my list. It's just, you can see they went through a retool and a renovation, right? Up suites, new press box, upped it. Yes, the one side looks very different, right? Inside that bowl, it's the same one level grand bowl it always has been. They put new seating in, took out the benches. Now you have more angled seating. They did small thing, upgraded their concession areas, widened it. You can see the new blacktop, more choices. They, all the history still there. Best vistas in football. College or pro, most beautiful views in football come at the Rose Bowl. So Rose Bowl always has been, always will be, until it becomes anything different. That's always been the top of my list. LSU is one of my favorite stadiums. Just, I don't know why. Maybe partly, I've been to better atmospheres. I just thought it was the day, the couple times I went there, beginning to end, it just felt different. I can't clarify it. It has a different feel than most stadiums. That's why, you know, LSU goes up. One of you guys, you mentioned in passing, Washington Husky Stadium out there in Seattle in the Northwest. Unbelievably cool. And now it's been renovated and updated. Oh, what now? It becomes a Tomain Tavern when they stink, right? It's a terrible place when they're bad, right? When they're not any good and that thing's two-thirds or a half full, it's just not that stadium. But when all the ingredients are right, that is a really, really cool stadium experience. So, and I have one sleeper to give you. South Carolina. Old school, you walk up the circles on the outside, and then you come into it and you're just like, this thing looks like it's from 1974. It looks that way to all your eyes, the whole experience. And then it doesn't when the game kicks off. It's the weirdest phenomenon I've ever experienced. Everything screams dusty old bird. Everything inside it screams modern stadium. Weird dynamic that I found absolutely fascinating.
Andy, I really enjoyed your analysis and examples of stadiums. And for me, it still comes to those things are great. I would love to go out to see the game against Washington. And it's also, it's tied into what college football is. You know what I mean? And you pointed out, hey, and it's always better with a full house. So we're going to have to end it there, Andy. I'd like to talk about this again sometime. We'll have to do that some other time, though. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.